with confidence.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. It's a program about state and local politics. We're going to spend a lot of the next 20 minutes or so talking about tomorrow's election. Later on in this program, we'll talk with the Hillsborough Supervisor of Elections about tomorrow's election and the do's and don'ts, and we'll be able to ask him some questions. You will be able to ask him some questions along with me. That's all coming up. First, two listener comments about last Friday's show. Last Friday on this show, our guest was Chris Hedges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who's out with a new book called America, the Farewell Tour. Here are two calls that we received after the show.
Thank you for the discussion with Chris Hedges and WMNF. Just wanted to say that I liked the part when he said we had to learn how to live on less, but do it for us. Thank you very much.
Elizabeth speaking about why I appreciate MNF. I was listening to NPR. NPR has truly wonderful programs, but then they have the news. And the news today was about Saudi Arabia dropping bombs on Yemen and killing 20 children and 4 women. They were condemned for this. And the announcer continued, America offers Saudi Arabia logistical support in order to help Saudi Arabia cope with Iranian terrorists in Yemen. Here's what I have to say about that. There was a $2.8 billion arms deal that may have been put together under Obama, but 45 took credit for it. And I wish they would call it. America sold Saudi Arabia $2.8 billion in arms with which they bombed Yemen. I mean, I think that this is a drumbeat for war. I don't understand why NPR sugarcoats the news and is complicit in the drumbeat for war, which will grow in greater intensity should 45 want to use that as an excuse. They did it for George Bush to get everyone on board for bombing Iraq, and now Iran is the enemy. I don't understand. It's what makes me glad for MNF being an independent news source. I just can't understand how NPR can be so nice and be so absolutely complicit.
Well, those were a couple of listener comments that came in after last Friday's show. Let's listen to Florida This Week, and as it's on, you can comment about anything our panelists are saying. You can email us in the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Coming up next, was Bill Nelson wrong to say that Russians are trying to hack Florida's election system? When it comes to Medicare, which Senate candidate can be counted on to protect it? Florida's Republicans are largely silent on Paul Manafort's convictions and Michael Cohen's guilty pleas. And if Bob Buckhorn runs for lieutenant governor, the chair of the Tampa City Council would become mayor. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lurie.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Tara Newsom is an attorney and a professor at St. Petersburg College. Jim Warashuk is the chair of the Hillsborough County Republican Executive Committee. Joe Brown is an independent journalist. And Susan McGrath is the chair of the Pinellas County Democratic Party. Well, it's great to have you here. Thanks for coming. Well, primary election day is this Tuesday. The controversy over whether Russia is trying to hack into some parts of Florida's election system continued this week. Earlier this month, Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson warned that Russian hackers have breached Florida's voting systems, but he offered little evidence to back up that claim. The Department of Homeland Security and the FBI sent out a letter early in the week saying that they have not seen any new or ongoing compromises of state or local election infrastructure in Florida. However, they did add that Russia has previously shown the intent and capability to conduct malicious cyber operations. Meantime, a conservative-leaning watchdog group filed an ethics complaint against Senator Nelson, contending he either discussed classified information in public or made up the claim of Russian hacking.
Tara, do you think Senator Nelson's in hot water? Because he hasn't really proved the allegation that Russia is hacking in Florida's election system.
Let's contextualize this. It's a very hyper-partisan time right now. And you've got Senator Marco Rubio, Republican. You have Senator Burr, a Republican, the chairman of the U.S. Senate U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, Vice Chairman Warner, all getting as close to bipartisanship as you can in not chastising Senator Nelson on his discussion regarding this Russian hacking. That's as close as we can get to an affirmation that there might be something there. We did see that the FBI came out with the letter saying that they didn't have any information, but you also saw Vice Chairman Warner come out with a very clear statement that both Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, and Senator Nelson are right to warn state election officials regarding threats to democracy. So in this hyper-partisanship-ness, it might be worth thinking that there's something there. I don't think we're really going to know the answer until after the elections. And so to chastise a sitting U.S. senator who sits on the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee on trying to protect democracy, I think we should be more careful than that.
But Jim, conservatives are all over Senator Nelson on this one. They're saying, look, either he's betrayed classified information, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he should put up some proof. I mean, the conservatives are on him like white on rice, if I could say that.
Well, I can say this as a career former intelligence officer. I want to see the evidence, and to make a statement like that is kind of preposterous without any information that justifies that. That would have come from the intelligence community. And granted, there is a track record of the Russians being a threat to us, not only in cyber, but in everything else that we've dealt with them over the course of history. The evidence is really what's there. And if there was an actual report that needed to go to the state and to all the supervisors of elections, that would have been put out relatively quickly.
Would that have been a classified? Would that have been secret? Because, you know, if this information is closely held, I'm wondering, even can Senator Nelson even say anything more than he said because this information is classified?
Well, it would have been determined based on the sources that they used to gather that information. And once it's analyzed by our intelligence community and put forward to certainly the governor and those, they might reduce the classification of it so that it could be usable by all the supervisors of elections. But at that level, coming from a senator, if it was there, I'm sure they would have shared that report with not only him, but both of our senators, as well as the governor and even some of our House of Representative officials. I mean, that's pretty important when you have when you make a claim that there is a Russian threat pending. That's pretty serious.
Susan, what do you think? Is Senator Nelson in hot water over this, or is he telling us as much as he can? What's your take on this?
So this was in response to a question by a reporter, right? And we, you know, as Tara said, we have senators Burr and Warner who are already telling us that, you know, there's something to that. Senator Nelson actually did not disclose any classified information, which is what we'd expect. But what would we expect him to say? Like, no, there's not anything out there when he has access to this information? That's what we want our elected officials do, to kind of like raise a yellow flag to, you know, alert people that there's things going on there. And I'd like to add that as governor, Rick Scott also has security clearance. So he could request a classified debriefing with the Department of Homeland Security if he was really worried about that and get to the bottom of that, but that's not happened yet.
Okay. Joe, should we be worried as voters, should we be worried that the Russians are trying to get into Florida's election system?
Yes. You know, it's like the old joke about the guy, the paranoid guy. He said, you know, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean ain't nobody following me. You know, a lot of voters are paranoid about, you know, our election after 2016. Yeah. And I'll give the Russians credit. At least they participated in the election. You know, about 100 million Americans didn't, who were eligible to do so. But, Nelson probably should have just kept his mouth shut, because he can't win either way. By warning us that there might be something, you know, he's giving out classified information. Not supposed to do that. And then if it's wrong, then they want to get on him because he gave out some wrong information, some false information. So maybe just should have kept it on the down low, so to speak, and like saying that kept it with supervisors.
Tara, do you think voters will look at what Nelson has said and think less of him or think more of him? What do you think?
I really believe that most Americans, and Floridians in particular, because we're such a high populous state, really want integrity in elections. And I think they're willing to pay a little bit of a price to wait and find out what the truth and veracity is of the claim and make sure that we get it right. Because I think what happened in 2016 was so disorientating to most Americans that we had meddling in our elections, that even if, and even Burr and Warner said, hey, maybe it wasn't a good idea to disclose publicly this stuff. But then they came out, both Republicans and Democrats, supporting the fact that he was warning. That alone tells me that Floridians probably should take the lead of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee and maybe give time to Senator Nelson to let the chips reveal themselves.
Jim, do you think Florida voters will think more or less of Senator Nelson because he's made this statement?
I think, depending on how it's, with the context it's put into between now and November, will be the critical part. And if any evidence
does. Republicans will use this up until November.
Republicans will.
Yeah.
But I think there will be more to follow between now and November. You know, maybe we'll see some report, maybe we won't, and that will determine and drive the impact of it and how important it is as an issue.
Okay. Well, Republican Governor Rick Scott has been running an ad claiming that Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson voted to cut Medicare.
News reports reveal that Nelson doesn't pay payroll taxes for his employees. He doesn't even provide them with health benefits. It's stealing money from Medicare and Social Security. And
according to PolitiFact, the claims in that ad about Medicare cuts are mostly false, because it turns out the cuts were not to Medicare, but were cuts in payments made to private insurance companies that run Medicare Advantage. There is some irony here. Before he was governor, Rick Scott was CEO of Columbia HCA, which defrauded Medicare and was fined $1.7 billion. It was the largest Medicare fraud in U.S. history.
Well, Susan, no doubt Florida voters pay a lot of attention to Medicare. Which party do you think Florida voters trust more to preserve Medicare?
Thanks for asking that question.
So I'm going to ask Jim the same question, though, so don't feel too confident.
So I think you can look at the context of how the different parties view these issues. So there's one party who considers these entitlements, right? And there's another party who considers these safety nets, right? So when it comes to Medicare, Rick Scott ran in 2010 for the gubernatorial race on a platform of privatizing Medicare and Medicaid and Veterans Health Services. Bill Nelson actually advocated in support of closing the donut hole for Part D Medicare on prescription drugs, and has been against the voucher program for Medicare and is against raising the age. So I think the you look at where the parties stand, there's a pretty clear distinction there. And it goes back to what you just mentioned in the beginning of this segment, right? For an elected official who was involved in the largest Medicare fraud in the history of the country to be attacking his opponent on not supporting Medicare is the height of hypocrisy.
Jim, what do you think? Is the governor on the right track, and is Bill Nelson out to cut Medicare, and has he cut Medicare in the past?
Well, I think what's really at play here is when you define what the cuts are, whether they're direct or indirect. And here we have indirect cuts that were made to private insurance companies. Eventually, those cuts are going to be felt by the consumers who use it. Cuts are cuts. And so I think what needs to be looked at is what's going to be the impact and how soon, if that's the case.
Joe, I think the question is, if one of these people is elevated to be the senator for the next 6 years. Which one do you think will be the strongest advocate of supporting and maybe even expanding Medicare?
That's a good question, because Rick Scott certainly took a big advantage of Medicare when he was running his insurance company. No, but what Nelson did was, along with the Obama administration, cut funding to Medicare Advantage programs, like the one that Rick Scott's company did. Mm-hmm. And that is what I thought Republicans wanted to do. They want to pass on more costs to patients to save money and to help with the long-term health of the system. So that he didn't really make cuts to Medicare, per se. I guess it's a matter of semantics.
Not the government part.
Not the government part. But yeah, the subsidy, the money paid to Medicare Advantage companies was cut. Yes, mm-hmm. He is guilty of that. But that's pretty much what Republicans went along with.
Tara, how do you think this is going to play with the voters? I mean, will voters say, Bill Nelson is a danger to my Medicare, or will voters say Rick Scott's a danger to my Medicare?
Floridians are smart cookies. They do not have amnesia. They are they have a long memory, and I think they will remember not just the $1.7 billion worth of fraud, but also the remembering of the fighting from Governor Scott against Obamacare and the expansion of Medicaid. So I think Floridians will see through this. They'll see that this was a failed attempt at deflecting from his own past. I think it was a bad decision both politically and for Floridians to start this fight. And I think it might end up hurting Rick Scott in his election.
All right. Well, this week, President Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was convicted of 8 financial crimes, and the president's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to 8 charges, some having to do with paying hush money to cover up Trump's illicit affairs with a Playboy model and an adult film star. So those affairs would not become known in the last weeks of the presidential campaign. The convictions raise questions about whether the president violated any laws and about the types of people he hires. While many Republican candidates on this coming Tuesday's ballot are trying to closely link themselves to the president, few elected Florida Republicans are trying to distance themselves from President Trump. And the question is the smart strategy for Florida Republicans to maintain their loyalty to the president, or should they be trying to create some distance in the wake of what's happened to Manafort and Cohen? And Jim, let me put that question to you. I mean, is the smart strategy to say the president might have screwed up here, or the smart strategy is to say I'm still supporting the president because he didn't violate any laws?
Well, a lot of this we heard all along over the last couple of years, and that's always been a question in the back of people's minds. I think the real issue is candidates are going to look to the president because of what he's been able to do in the primary races around the country. It's got a pretty good record. And the other one is what voters are going to think, and voters are getting tired of wasn't this about Russia collusion, and now we've gone down these rabbit holes and looked for other things, whether it's someone's taxes from 2005 or whether it's the once again issue of sexual parlance and innuendo and things like that. Nothing claimed, just pretty much accusations. So I think the voters are getting really tired of this particular deal with the Mueller investigation special counsel, and they'll look to the candidates to see what the candidates are saying.
So there's no need, if you're a Republican running for office this time around in the primary on Tuesday or in November, there's no need to distance yourself from the president.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think about that?
No, it'd be political suicide in a lot of races. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that. But as far as ongoing investigation. Whitewater lasted, I think, 7 years. It started out as some deal, and then it went, I forget where it started. It was
land,
so long.
Land deal in Arkansas.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah, but it ended up with some, him getting impeached over, a blue dress. So, these investigations have a way of meandering into places they didn't intend to.
Sure.
Yeah. Tara, what do you think about this? Is it the smart strategy if you're a Republican running for office to stay close to the president?
Well, what we've seen from a variety of polling, that you've got anywhere from 38 to 42% Republicans that are They are absolutely committed and loyal to Donald Trump. And in the districts that are very strong Republican districts, they should absolutely align with Donald Trump. In the more moderate, you know, areas in the state, I think you won't really know how it all plays out until after the general election, because the midterm is a closed primary. But I think we need to be very careful on what we think we know about Republicans. There's a lot that we don't know about the differing factions within the Republican Party, and I think that we're all looking to the midterm elections to help us understand that.
Susan, a lot of Republicans here in Florida are still cheerleading the president. As a Democrat, you don't offer advice to Republicans, but what do you think about that? From your side, does that help your side?
I wish the conversation was more about what's the right thing to do, and less about what benefits us politically. I'm sure that there's Republicans in districts who feel like it's to their advantage to continue to support the administration and what's going on, but at the end of the day, this is a level of corruption. The campaign manager was convicted of 8 felonies, and then his own attorney is implicating him in felony behavior, and we are hearing crickets, right? So the foundation of our government was built on 3 branches of government being checks and balances on each other, right? For the legislature to not have some kind of hearings or not having some kind of process begun on this is not the way our government was designed to work. And I really wish the conversation was, I wish politicians had the more fortitude to do the right thing and stand up on this.
You want some congressional oversight?
Yeah. Yes, and you know, to some protection on the Mueller investigation at this point. So,
Jim, why do you think? I mean, is it because the allegations against President Trump don't amount to clear illegality? Is it the president's handling of the economy, where we've got good numbers on Wall Street and good numbers on unemployment? What is it? What creates that loyalty for President Trump?
Well, I think the loyalty is just that. First and foremost, the good things that he's been doing and accomplishing, and that's there for the record. The other thing is that a lot of them probably look at it from the standpoint of, why are we hearing about it now? Why didn't we hear about this beforehand? And is this a partisan effort from one side to do this? And I think, as I said earlier, they anticipated this being an investigation into Russia collusion, and it's now spiraled out of control almost into multiple other things. And none of it is really about the president. It's about people who have worked for him and what they did. That it's both confusing, but it's of concern. Why are we dragging our feet through this again? And as Joe said, we already went through this one time before with Whitewater. Are we doing this again? And I think Americans are getting tired of it.
Do you think the president should fire Sessions or end the Mueller investigation?
I was going to talk about that in my
closing comment.
Okay,
we'll wait.
I do want to just say one thing academically, from an academic house or viewpoint. I think there is a real, there may be a legacy historically here to not have one party hold the same values to this presidency as they've done in previous presidencies. Said in a plain way, if we're going to evaluate Hillary Clinton and President Obama with a lens through value voters' views, those same value voters need to be evaluating this presidency, whether it be the president himself or whom he surrounds himself, so that the legacy of how they view history isn't one set of rules applies to this party but not to this party.
But what we're seeing, we're seeing the president, though, say that he wants Sessions, the Attorney General, to go after Hillary Clinton and go after some of the president's other political critics, too.
Yes, but...
And investigate them and add to the...
Anytime there is a ripe... an issue for it to be investigated, that should be seen all the way through, just as this investigation should be seen all the way through. And no one is above the law. And so I think that we need to hold that as a not Republican or not Democratic view, but an American view.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned, this coming Tuesday is primary election day, the last day people will have to vote on races up and down the ballot.
The hotly contested Democratic primary for governor is very close, with several polls this week showing Gwen Graham in a neck-and-neck race with Phil Levine. In some polls, Andrew Gillum, too, was gaining strength. Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn has endorsed Graham for governor, and he's being mentioned as a possible selection as her running mate. If Buckhorn does run for lieutenant governor, he would have to resign as mayor, making way for City Council President Frank Reddick to become acting mayor to fill out the last 8 months of Buckhorn's term. If he becomes acting mayor, Frank Reddick would become Tampa's first African-American mayor.
All right, so Joe, some dominoes have to fall here. First, Graham has to win, then Buckhorn has to be named as her running mate, and then Frank Reddick would assume the job of acting Tampa mayor. What do you think the chances of that happening are?
Pretty good, but like you said, first things first. Yeah. You know, and Reddick would be the first black mayor in, I think, any city in Tampa Bay area, mm-hmm. not just
Tampa
itself.
Making history in Tampa,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely, but at Tampa and Tampa Bay area. But, yeah, I think he would be a good choice. He's done well. He's fought hard for his constituents. I think a lot of people would expect, a lot of black folks I know would expect a whole lot more than what he's able to deliver. Like, they expect him to bring supermarkets and drugstores and everything else to District 5 that is lacking. Mm-hmm. There's something he can't do. But he's been a strong voice for his district, and he knows how things run.
Susan, let me ask you a quick question. It looks like it's neck and neck, would it be fair to say, between Levine and Graham right now?
It's, by all indications, those two are running very competitively. Andrew Gillum's been able to pick up some support and has some third-party groups doing some canvassing for him, so we'll see where he falls, but it looks like it's very competitive between Levine and Graham.
What do you think the big question is? Is, like, what the winner is going to have to do X. What is the winner on Tuesday going to have to do in the Democratic primary?
Elections are won by ground game, by and large, right? So between messaging and ground game, we'll see who has the strongest campaign. It's down to the wire, so at this point it could be a couple of good options.
Levine has quite a ground game.
Levine has 14 offices, and his campaign's knocked more than 300,000 doors, which is quite an accomplishment. A lot of people like Gwen Graham because of her father and would love to see a woman in that position, so we shall see. I will say that any one of them would be a great governor.
All right. Well, we're going to find out Tuesday night. Before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Jim, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Well, we kind of mentioned a little bit is the Sessions and Trump issue that has once again come to the surface of the news over the last day or so. And a lot of people are asking, is Sessions done? Is he going to be is he on his way out? I think this is perhaps a strategy between Trump and Sessions, that they're playing this as a way to build either support for Sessions or those who think the president should remove him. And it's mainly to perhaps get some sympathy for Sessions, because he's going to be the guy, if the call comes to end the Mueller investigations, it would be Sessions. So I think they're strategizing and positioning themselves for that, and we'll see what happens.
All right, we will. All right, Susan, your other big story.
So the Democratic National Committee is meeting this week in Chicago, and there's been a lot of discussion about the 2016 elections and how parties should operate. The Rules and Bylaws Committee passed pretty swiftly a suggested revision to diminish the importance and the ability for unpledged delegates to vote in a presidential nomination.
The so-called superdelegates.
And that's expected to pass on a vote this weekend.
Okay. Joe, your other big story.
Next Tuesday, we're going to get probably some more dismal voter turnout numbers. But I just happened to get a hold of one of these sample ballots for nonpartisan voters. And it's 6 races on it, 3 school board and 3 judicial candidate. And the person I got it from said, I'm not bothering to show up for that. Oh. And a lot of people won't. So it's something to think about, you know, if we want to increase voter turnout. We had this big argument about open and closed primaries, you know, before the show started. But there's something to think about.
School board elections are very important.
I know, and so are judicial
elections are very important.
Absolutely.
So no matter who you are, vote.
Yep.
vote on Tuesday.
Yes.
Tara, your last, your other big story.
Well, you know what? I think it's not quite a big story, but it should be. When we get a new governor, we often think about the judicial appointments that the governor can do, but there's tons of appointments that are very meaningful to Floridians, like the Port Authority, Swift Mud, and the state and community college system in the 67 different counties in Florida. And I think Floridians, if they pay attention to the governor, should also be paying attention to who they appoint, because it could make all the difference in their communities economically, access to education, environmentally. So it'll be something to watch.
That's really true. They have a lot of power. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And my guest on that show, Jim Warshak, is the chairman of the Hillsborough County Executive Committee. We also heard from Susan McGrath, who's chair of the Pinellas Democratic Party. Joe Brown is there. He's an independent journalist. And Tara Newsom is a professor at St. Pete College. Those were my guest panelists on that show. And we'll do it again next Monday at 11 o'clock here on WMNF, a replay of Florida This Week. Well, tomorrow, as you heard during that show, is the final day for people to vote. It's Election Day, and we're joined by Craig Latimer, who is the Supervisor of Elections in Hillsborough County. That is an elected position. And Craig, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, you are like Santa Claus at Christmas, so you dropped in here on the second busiest day of your year. Thank you for doing that.
Not a problem.
How many people have voted already in Hillsborough County?
We've already had over 131,700 people have already cast a ballot, which is fantastic. That's about 15.7% of our voters have already voted. The statewide average right now is at 14.2, so we're doing well.
That is good. Now, compared to 4 years ago at this time, are we ahead or behind of the number of voters in Hillsborough County?
Yeah, so the 2014 election, we've already surpassed the entire election total. We had about 126,000 people total voted in the 2014 primary.
Do you have an idea why this is happening?
I think a lot of it's because we've got open governor's race, open cabinet seats. There's a lot of candidates on both sides. Plus, we've got a lot of local races that have multiple candidates. You know, we've got some school board races that have, I think, six candidates in it. There's primaries in a lot of the county commission races, too.
So do you track these on your website? Can I go to your website and see these numbers?
Absolutely. You can go to the website, votehillsborough.org. There's a button to click on the front page there. You can look at all the votes by type, by date, by party, by anything you want to.
All right. So Craig Latimer is here. He's the Supervisor of Elections in Hillsborough County. And if you've got a question for Craig, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so let's say I got a mail-in ballot and I won't be able to make it tomorrow to make it down to the polling place. Can I mail in my mail-in ballot today?
Would strongly suggest you don't do that. A vote-by-mail ballot has to be in my office by 7 p.m. on Election Day. So if you try and take that to a polling site to drop it off, we can't do that either because they have no way to get it there. But if you can get to a polling site, you can surrender that vote-by-mail ballot and just vote a regular ballot on Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can drop it at any of our four offices. It has to be in our office by 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Not postmarked either. That doesn't count. So anything that comes after 7 will be late and won't be counted.
Okay. So in your four places, where are the four places they can turn them in Hillsborough County?
So we have our office at downtown at the County Center, and then the Election Service Center is on Falkenberg Road. We also have a southeast office that's at Gibsonton Drive in 301, and a northwest office is Gunn Highway across from Plantation.
All right, and again, these would be on your website. How do you know that somebody isn't voting twice? Like, let's say, because I assume that all 830 or 40,000 voters in Hillsborough County got a mail-in ballot in the mail. Is that right?
No, only people that request a vote-by-mail ballot will receive one, and they're only good through two general elections unless you re-up that. So everybody got a sample ballot that didn't get a real ballot,
okay.
Didn't get a vote-by-mail ballot. So anybody that voted by mail, we're sending them the actual ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else gets a sample.
How do I know, though, how do we know as the public that somebody didn't send in their mail-in ballot and then show up at their polling place or early voting place and vote?
So, yeah, that's a great question, and we get it quite often, and it's a pretty easy answer, too. It's all tracked electronically. It's just like you can track your ballot back to my office, your vote-by-mail ballot, so we know when that hits there. That information is automatically updated in our voter rolls, so if you try and go to a polling site, we're going to pull you up in the electronic poll book, and it's going to say, wait a minute, you've already voted. Vice versa, if you go and vote and then try and drop a ballot in the mail or drop it at one of our offices, we're going to show you has already voted, and that ballot's not going to be accepted.
Okay. When I go to vote, what do I have to bring with me in order to vote tomorrow at the polling places around Hillsborough County? What do I have to prove to the people there that are working the lines?
Yeah, so you have to supply a photo and signature ID. The easiest one is your driver's license. That's going to be the quickest way we check you in. But there's 14 approved different types of photo and signature identification, and it can be a combination of different types too. But we urge people, you know, bring a driver's license. If you don't, then it's going to take a passport or some type of student ID, military ID, something like that.
Mm-hmm. In the old days, could we have brought our electric bill or a bill to our house?
Years ago, that was one of the ways that you could identify, but that's been a long time.
Okay, so that doesn't count anymore.
No.
And you know, my memory may be fading me, but I swear that when I voted at Kate Jackson years ago, I knew the woman who was working behind the counter for you, for the election supervisor, not you, but it was probably Robin Kravanik or Pam Iorio or somebody. And I just said, hey, I'm here. Nice to see you, Dottie. And she said, okay, you can vote. Just sign here. But is my memory wrong?
Well, maybe not. You know, I can't answer that, but I can tell you that today with the electronic poll books, there is a check-in process, and it has to be completed before you can be issued a ballot. And it's a pretty thorough process that we go through, including we're going to be looking at the signature on the identification you provide against what we have in our files to make sure that it's a good signature, too.
What if the signature doesn't match?
If the signature doesn't match, you're going to have to vote a provisional ballot. And then it will be investigated to make sure that you are, in fact, who you are. You've got 48 hours to bring us any additional information. But I got to tell you that, you know, we do thousands and thousands of vote-by-mail ballots, and I look at these signatures all the time, and I know we all worry about, you know, I signed the pad at the grocery store so fast, it was just a line. But fortunately, people take their time when they're signing in at the elections on election day and the vote-by-mail, and the signatures match. They're dead ringers, quite frankly.
Are all the vote-by-mail ballots counted?
Absolutely. They're the first ones that are counted, as a matter of fact. On election night, the first results that we put out will be vote-by-mail and early vote totals.
Any idea how long it's going to take you to count all the votes tomorrow night? Like, when would you expect to be finished tomorrow night?
I hope to be finished by no later than 9 o'clock tomorrow night, to be truthful with you.
Wow. That's amazing.
So technology. Technology is a great thing when it's working.
Craig Latimer is our guest. He's the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's talk about on-campus voting. Right now, if I was a student on the USF Tampa campus, is there an on-site place to vote in tomorrow's primary?
There is. We've had an election day site at the Marshall Center for quite a while now, as a matter of fact. But we're really excited that we're going to be now putting an early vote site out at USF also. They've been very great to work with. And in the general election in November, we will have an early vote site at the USF campus.
And that'll be at the Sundome?
It will be at the now known as the Yingling Center.
Okay.
And we'll be right at Gate A is where it'll be. Plenty of parking there. And we're really looking forward to being able to provide that opportunity to the students. It's not far at all from the student housing, as well as the daily people that are there with faculty, staff, and commuters, students that are commuting.
What if I'm a student from out of town? I don't live here in Hillsborough County, yet I spend most of my time here in Hillsborough County as a student at USF. Do I have the right to vote in Hillsborough County?
You do. You're going to have to change your address, and you're going to have to basically claim Hillsborough County as your residence, and then you will be able to vote a regular ballot. You can change your address on election day, as a matter of fact. So it's a personal option, and we talk to the students a lot, especially when we're registering them. And, you know, it's their choice whether they want to vote where they reside or go back to, you know, where their parents may be and where they're going to go back, or if they want to vote locally here in Hillsborough County. They certainly have that option.
What's the deadline to register for the general? The general election is November 6th. What's the deadline to register for November 6th?
It's 29 days before the election.
Okay, so we're talking about the first week in October.
It's like October 9th, I think.
All right. Tomorrow is a primary election, so mm-hmm. we usually think about Democrats and Republicans in the primary election. Are there any issues on the ballot tomorrow for people who aren't Democrats and Republicans?
Absolutely, and a great question. Those that are no party affiliation or minor parties will have all of the races that are the nonpartisan races, school board and judges. And I will tell you that there's two races, one judge race and one school board race, that will be decided tomorrow.
So it's a big deal.
It is.
All right.
It
school is. Board in Hillsborough County, judges in Hillsborough County. Russian hacking. Senator Nelson has raised this issue that he says that he has seen information that the Russians have been able to penetrate some of the voting systems in Florida. He hasn't named which counties. Can you add anything to that? What do you know about
that? Let's right up front, let's talk about voting systems, as you said. First, there's the registration system. And the registration system is not connected to the tabulation system. And this is in all of Florida. By state law, my servers that handle all the tabulation of the votes is a standalone air gap system, and it is not connected to any other system.
What does air gap mean?
So that means that it's a standalone. It's not connected to the internet or my intranet in any way. It's all by itself there in the corner, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big distinctions. You know, in January of 2017, the election industry was declared a critical infrastructure by the federal government. And that's opened a tremendous amount of assets to us through the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, of course, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and locally with the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office. We feel we're doing the right things right now as far as cybersecurity and the physical security of our building. We've used the assets of these agencies to come look at what we're doing and how we're doing things. And I can tell you that I am very confident right now that I don't have any intrusion in our system at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, well, this is a political question. If you don't want to answer it, you don't have to. Do you think that Senator Nelson's right? That Russians are attempting to, or no, he actually went further. He said they're in the system.
Yeah, and I will tell you that I had the opportunity to also meet with Senator Marco Rubio May 30th at the Orlando airport, and he made a very similar statement. But we also know that the Homeland Security and the FBI, if there was indications that they were currently on someone's system, they would be assisting them in some way.
Okay. Widespread voting by undocumented immigrants. Some people, Kris Kobach, who's running for governor out there in Kansas, who was ahead of the president's voting investigative panel, he says that he thinks that there's widespread voting by undocumented immigrants. You're the safeguarder of the Hillsborough County voting system. Do you think that's true?
I can tell you it's not in Hillsborough County in the state of Florida. You know, to register to vote in this state, you have to furnish a driver's license number or the last 4 years Social Security, and there's a match made. With the Real ID Act anymore, we would know if somebody is a non-citizen to begin with. So I don't believe we do. And additionally, and this is going to be a tip that I'm going to give to your listeners out there. If you get summons to jury duty, one of the boxes on that form to get out of it is that I am not a U.S. citizen. If you check that box, the next person to get the information is me. And then I'm going to check to see if you're registered to vote. And if you are, then we're going to have a little chat about it, and you're probably going to get turned back over to the judge. So don't check that box.
Have you ever come across a case of voting fraud, though, in your district in Hillsborough County?
We have turned over some cases where there's been some situations to the state attorney's office previously. You know, the biggest problem that we have is somebody may get their vote by mail ballot, which we mail out 35 days before the election. And then as it gets closer to the election, you know, the hype starts, and then they'll show up to vote and they've already voted. So they're going to vote a provisional ballot and it's not going to be counted. So they're not double voting either.
How often does that happen? Are we talking about tens?
Yeah, no, it's a couple times in election.
Really, not
that
often.
It's generally some of our more mature voters.
Okay, and I understand what you're getting at. Craig Latimer is here. He's the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Let me look at some of these emails that have come in. This email, let me see if I can bring it up here. Are early votes counted before Election Day? That's from Donald, who's, I think, in Sarasota.
And so the early vote totals are actually uploaded the day before the primary election, or before the election day, and they're basically held in queue in this server. And then at a little bit after 7, as long as we don't have anybody in line still, then we will push that information up, and that's when it goes out on the election night returns that you see on our website and that the press gets at the same time.
What happens if I'm in line and it's 7 o'clock and I haven't voted yet tomorrow?
Yeah, if you're in line at 7 o'clock, you're going to get to cast a ballot. As long as you're in that line, you're going to be able to vote.
Okay. Here's another question. Jonathan writes this. I made the mistake of signing my name in the morning when my hand was shaky. And he goes on to write, and our computer is a little slow. The Russians could be hacking our computers here. How crummy can a signature be and still be acceptable? Should I have signed it again and provided a second one, second signature, writes Jonathan.
Yeah, so if someone forgets to sign their vote-by-mail ballot or the signature doesn't match, there's a remedy for that. We actually will mail them an affidavit. They have to fill out the affidavit, sign it, and then send us back a copy of one of the approved types of identification. So, as a matter of fact, with Canvassing Board, I think we just accepted 100 and something of those that people either forgot to sign it or the signature didn't match and they did the affidavit, sent it back. You know, the biggest problem that we see is maybe a spouse might sign for another spouse or something, and when we send the letter, then we get the right signature back.
Okay. Robert writes this, are candidates able to request an email list of registered voters from your office in order to send out mass emails?
No. As a matter of fact, if you get a vote-by-mail ballot and we've got your email address, that is not information that's public record. The biggest issue that we've seen on this, and it's both phone numbers and email addresses, it's actually coming from the parties. The parties maintain all this information in computers, and you know, somebody might have signed a petition, they put the information down, they've captured the information there, or even with door-to-door canvassing, a lot of times they'll get information from the voter. But we do, you know, people get upset with all of the ads sometimes, and they call us and want to accuse us of selling the lists and giving their phone numbers, and 9 times out of 10, we don't even have the information that was out there.
Is it public information that I'm registered as a voter and I live at such and such address? Is that public information?
It is. Matter of fact, that your name, address, party affiliation, and the elections that you have voted in, not how you voted, because we don't know how you voted. Mm-hmm. It's a secret ballot. But yes, that information is public record.
So you can identify, if somebody wants to go in, they can identify the so-called super voters, the people that vote reliably every election.
Yeah, and that's what the campaigns do. You know, we produce every month, we have a total of how many registered voters and which elections they voted in, their information, party affiliation, and that's what the campaigns use a lot of times to target the super voters, as you call them, that the ones that are voting in all the primaries and voting in all the general elections.
Is that information available electronically, or do they have to go in and get these records by hand?
No, it's electronic.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We actually upload it to a server, and they can go up and pull it down from the server.
Okay. Craig Latimer, is there anything else? Well, first of all, what time do the polls open tomorrow?
7 a.m. sharp. 7 to 7 is voting tomorrow on the 28th on primary election day.
And Craig, is there anything else that you think voters in Hillsborough County need to know about tomorrow?
So if you're going to vote tomorrow, number one, you have to vote at the precinct you reside in. If you're not sure of that, go to our website, votehillsborough.org. You can actually put your information in, pull yourself up, make sure your party affiliation is what you think it is, make sure you know where your polling site is, and don't wait till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Come on out early, get it out of the way before the thunderstorms start, and have a good day.
All right. Well, Craig Latimer, thanks a lot for coming by WMNF. Great to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Well, this is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, and in just a moment, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to hang in with Craig a little bit longer. Some more emails have come in. Let's just read these because we only have about 5 minutes left in the show. Bob writes this. Mrs. Latimer was my kindergarten teacher, and when I went to vote, we would talk, but she never asked for my ID, as well as other members of the local voting team knew there was no need. Then I would vote and would not need an ID. And there's a Bob question. He lives in Palmasia, and he says that's how it used to be.
Yeah, Mrs. Latimer was his kindergarten teacher because that was my mother.
Oh, okay.
Who taught kindergarten in the area there and was a poll worker for over 20 years. And that's the way it used to be, I'm sure, you know, years ago. But now, you know, we've got a great ID law here in Florida, and a lot of states have copied it because it's comprehensive. It's not onerous that you have to have a certain government-issued ID. You can have other types of ID. It is a good system.
All right. This one from Scott in Tampa says, yesterday I was at the West Tampa Library for Souls to the Polls, and Mr. Latimer arrived and was hanging out with Gwen Graham. And so there's Scott in Tampa.
Yeah, no, Mr. Latimer was not hanging out with Gwen Graham. Mr. Latimer was making sure that Gwen Graham and her people that were there were staying outside the 100-foot no solicitation zone. So we were out there to make sure that they were staying outside the area and nobody was getting any advantage.
Do some candidates and their poll workers try to get a little too close?
Well, you know, we've got all the polling sites marked. We used to just do it with cones, and mysteriously the cones would start getting closer and closer. So we actually go out and put paint markings on the ground now for the 100-foot mark.
And this email says, if a student wants to vote locally, does that student have to change his driver's license address in order to do that? Or do they just have to let the elections office know they want to change their address in order to vote locally? I was told that when I called the elections office that the student's ID had to match where they were voting.
No, they can claim residency anywhere. They don't have to change a driver's license or do anything like that.
All right. Well, Craig Latimer, thank you so much for coming by. Sorry about those additional questions, but
oh, no problem.
There's a guy that knew your mom. That's great. That's great. Is your mom still alive?
She isn't. No, she's passed away.
All right. I'm sorry to hear that, but thank you for stopping by. I know how busy you are. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. That's Craig Latimer, who is the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, there's music from Oliver Mitikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and we're going to open up the phone lines for the last few minutes of the show and see where this takes us. Of course, John McCain died over the weekend, and we heard a really interesting discussion about John McCain's life on Democracy Now! A little bit earlier. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And Craig is no longer here, but let's see if we can, and this may be an anonymous person, a caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Yes, Daryl, I'm calling from Tampa. I would like to know, absentee ballots, do they have to be turned in tomorrow?
Craig says that the ballots have to be in one of his four offices in Hillsborough County before 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
Okay, so I could not turn it in to the place where I normally would go to vote. They have to be in those four designated.
No, I think, you know, if I recall correctly, he said that you can turn in your mail-in ballot. That's what we used to call an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And you can turn it in at the polling place and just vote. You can vote there instead in person at the polling place. Just turn in your ballot.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. And I'd just like to say my heartfelt, sincere condolences to John McCain's family. We're going to miss him, miss that kind of integrity nowadays. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot. You know, and I got to say, I am not the expert on elections. Craig was here, and we tried to answer a bunch of questions while Craig was here, so I'm probably not going to go out too far on a limb. Let's go to Nancy. Nancy, where are you calling from?
Hi. Thank you, sir.
Hey, so what's up?
Oh, okay. Just a few thoughts on the voting. Years ago, I asked my grandmother who she voted for. And I was just a little kid, and I grew up in a Republican household and since woke up. But anyway, she informed me that was a very rude question to ask because it was nobody's business. And I wonder how many people realize that these days. That's my comment.
Yeah, I remember talking to my parents when I was in fifth grade, and I asked them how they voted that year, and they would not tell me. I'm not sure why. I haven't gone back and asked them why they didn't tell me that year. I've known ever since how they voted, but not that year. Yeah.
Because it's a secret ballot, and they took that very seriously.
Yeah. Well, it's true.
Now
you think that's a good practice, Nancy? Do you think that's a good practice?
Absolutely, it's a good practice. People will, I worked at a place once, and the place was just lousy with Republicans, and all the doctors were Republican, and I mean, they turn on Rush Limbaugh when they came in the morning, and I was in a pathology office, and but anyway.
All right. Yeah. Well, Nancy, I'm sorry to say we're out of time.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm sorry about that. All right, and if you want to comment about anything you've heard here the past few minutes, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Be sure to go